1, 2, 1, 2. Hello, hello, mic check. Welcome back to the Evolving Door podcast. That was my old podcast. Welcome back to the Storytelling for Social Impact podcast, where we talk to leaders in their fields about how storytelling can make a greater impact in the world and look at interesting campaigns that worked really well and why, and other ones that didn't work so well and why. I also always ask them about an SDG that they, a sustainable development goal that they love, which also gives us a little insight into their personal values. Today I was chatting with Alaho, A-L-A-H-O, Alaho, who has an amazing company called And Human. And so they're kind of like a brand design agency, but it's all about adding the human element. You know, there's a lot of talk at the moment and, you know, with AI and all these clever tools and all the rest of it. It's just remembering, always to remember, and human. So it was a beautiful conversation. It ranged far and wide. We talked about great campaigns. We talked about how to join the dots between different things. We talked about the importance of creativity and how it plays into finding meaning and purpose, how brands can also play a role in that sphere, and also how brands can create meaning for their customers, and that doesn't just mean commercial organizations, it can mean not-for-profits too, and create belonging for their community, and then also in a way mirror into society some of the things that we would like to see or that we feel are lacking in the world. So it was a wonderful conversation. Let's dive straight in, and I hope you really enjoy it. Cities like San Francisco, Vancouver, they're like, I think, my favorite cities, because you have the, like you say, the city, you got the ocean, and you got the mountains, and it's all in one wrapper.
Right.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's so nice. It is. I was in San Francisco for the first time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so I went to Vancouver Island, and then, you know, San Francisco is like 2 hours away. So I was like, I need to go and see it, just because I work with so many tech startups and I've been hearing all of these amazing things about San Francisco.
Mm.
And apparently the city has been cleaned up since, you know, from the whole, I would say, homelessness and
but Vancouver struggles from a lot of that too.
Yeah,
unfortunately, it does.
I didn't know that, but it sort of makes sense because of the weather, as in it allows people to be outside. But I'm just like looking at these people and I was like, you know, what failed them? You know, what?
Yeah. What, there's so many stories there, isn't there? Each one will be a story in itself, won't it?
Yeah, exactly. It kind of would be interesting to have someone go and interview people there just to see what happened. But also, you just never know who is, you know, who's like ready to talk.
And, to do that, yeah.
I
think there have been some projects like that, you know, the sort of story behind. I know here in the UK, we have a friend who's a hairdresser. He's like a barber, and he goes out and he regularly does haircuts for the homeless. And sometimes it's just something as simple as that, you know, a new set of clothes, a shower, a haircut can help you feel different.
Oh, 100%. And it's so funny because it's in theory external, but I feel like it changes so much internally for the person.
Exactly. Which is interesting, you know, sort of, I'm sure we'll come on to it a bit later, but when you think about things like brand and aesthetics and stuff, it's easy to think of them, as you say, external, maybe superficial, maybe materialistic, blah, blah, blah. But the point is they all have such a, the bleed between the internal and the external and all of these factors are so interconnected that I don't think it's really possible to completely separate them.
Yes, I agree 100%. And it's very intertwined and just also a brand and just like the visual stuff, it still carries meaning. And meaning
and feeling as
inherently,
well.
Feeling, meaning, and all of these things are very internal. So... They have to be connected.
Yeah. So let's, first of all, in your own words, how would you describe kind of what you do?
Yeah, so in the shortest form possible, I would say I grow brands by turning them into places where people belong.
Nice, like that.
Yeah, so that would be the shortest form of what we do. And then, of course, what goes into that is a whole other stories.
But your company is called And Human. So even in that alone, tell us a bit about that name and kind of like, I think that's a huge part of storytelling and connecting and is kind of trying to, we talk about getting to the heart of a story, but it's a similar idea of kind of trying to get to the humanity of a story. What's behind that name?
So marketing in itself has a very bad rep, I would say. So everybody, or most people, and you know, rightfully so, for a very long time, we've been fed all of these messages and manipulative campaigns that, you know, made people do something. So marketing was always, or advertising was always, about making people want to buy something. And that in itself sounds very manipulative. But marketing and branding is also just about creating change and solving problems and then influencing people to take a certain action. And that is in itself an amplifier. So if it is a good action, it leads to good outcomes. And if it's a you know, obviously a bad thing, then it leads to worse outcomes. But everything links back to then just humanity in a way that we have all of these new tools. And now we have, you know, AI coming. Yeah. And every few years, there's new algorithms. Actually, these days, it's like every week, probably a new algorithm pops in, new tools, new tactics. And everyone's looking for this secret, you know,
quick fix as well. Yeah,
quick fix. But at the end of the day, humans have not evolved that much, so we still have the same needs that we did, you know, hundreds of years ago. And so if we can tap into those human components, we would be able to influence people and drive change. And so And Human was just, you know, everything that we do, we want to bring humanity to it. And
as
so,
well, yeah, like and
exactly,
human.
And human, exactly. Yeah. So anything that's before, it's like we're open to that because we don't know what's going to come, you know, in, what's going to come today, tomorrow, in 10 years. But everything that we do, we know that we're going to bring humanity to it.
Yeah, that's nice. I think it's a tricky one, whether it's your own personal content you're creating or you're doing it for clients. There's a part of us that sees what works. It's inevitably some kind of a formula and feels like maybe I should try that because it appears to work. But equally, I don't really like it.
Yeah.
I don't really like the way, I don't really like the format, or it doesn't feel right for me. Yet I would be stupid if I didn't do it because it appears to work. And so as humans, I think we get stuck in that kind of a thing where people just do more of what seems to be working, whether it's good for all of us or not.
It's true. I mean, you need to understand at least at a high level how it works in order to be able to even play the game. Hmm. I mean, now we have all of these short form content and there's a very specific formula to how short form content works. You know, the first second needs to be a hook and then you have, you know, this, and then at the end you have a CTA and it's like all of them are the same and the same. And you have so many of them and you have so many platforms as well. And it's like, which platform do I even get started on?
Yeah.
But so on the one hand, you have all of that where you need to be able to tell a story in 10 seconds or less, or just a fraction of it. But on the other hand, I feel like a lot of people are just so tired of it. And they're like, I'm looking for something with more nuance and more context. Yeah. And because of that, we have, you know, podcasts and more people reading books again and watching YouTube videos. I myself catch myself, for example, when I see a podcast that is less than 30 minutes, I'm like, that's not going to do it for me. You know, I need it to be at least an hour so I can listen to the whole story and have the full context. And
interesting.
I do feel like that there's more and more people that do move towards a more nuanced way of storytelling and just like listening to the real stuff and not just very performative 10 second things.
Yes.
Because in a short form video, you have to plan every single second. There's no space to just like leave things to chance because there's just the timing doesn't allow for that. So I think it's very performative when you do very short form content, whereas in a format like this, we can basically just talk to each other and see, you know, sometimes we say stuff that we're like ourselves surprised
of
how
like, wow,
wise that was.
That's pretty good.
Exactly. I was like, wow, this was unexpected, but still very reflective.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. And unfortunately, in the short form content, everything becomes sensationalized and polarized and and so on. And it appeals to our most base natures, you know, like greed or fear, or a lot of times. Yes. So yeah, you're absolutely right. I think there is a hunger for the longer form content. And I've started to see more people doing things like Substack, which I think is kind of like a type of blogging, isn't it? Like a longer form blogging and stuff like that. I always remembered years ago, you know, it used to be you'd get these things through the mail and they'd come in through the door and they'd be like a long copy driven sales letter. And every touch point is like ping pong with your brain. They're very expert, obviously, and it's to try and get you to invest in something or buy something or whatever. And I ended up at a certain point deciding I'm never going to read them anymore. I'm going to rip them up and throw them away straight away. Now, is it because they're bad or they're wrong? Maybe you could say that, but actually I took responsibility and I said, no, I just know how they affect me. And actually, why am I getting sucked in? It's because, like maybe I am looking for the quick fix, or maybe I am looking for this or that. So they're playing with how my brain works and I don't like that influence, so I'm going to remove it. But equally, with the whole content thing, it's very appealing that we can just sort of reach our audience with all this shorter form, easy to create stuff. And then going to back to something like Substack, to write a really good article on there, you're going to have to be willing to sit down and really spend some long hours researching it and writing it and doing it properly. Yes. And that's hard.
Yes. It is. It's so difficult.
And that's why I guess perhaps, let's see, in the next while, we'll start to become more valuable again, because people will realize that someone really has put in some hard work here to think about and present some ideas rather than just banged out an attention grabbing piece of short form content.
Absolutely. And the meaning from a longer form content is just that much more powerful. So if you think about in real life, right? Because I think digitally everything becomes very kind of skewed, and in our heads it just becomes very, it's just unrealistic almost. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But imagine if we were to just meet each other at a coffee shop every day for 2 seconds and just like, oh, hi, how are you? I'm all good. That's great. Thanks. Have a great day. And it doesn't matter that I see you 100 times in a year. I will not have as strong of a connection as if I would invite you for dinner with my family, for example, or even with, you know, with your wife and to our home, and we would spend, you know, 2 hours talking and so on. So I think just even having a one person or 10 people or 100 people that you can spend a bit more time with them versus a million people that you spend a few seconds with every single time, that is to me much more valuable from every kind of perspective, from an influence perspective, branding, marketing, connection, being human. That is so much more valuable to me than having a million people that I just say hi to every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's funny you use that example. I sometimes use a similar example. We used to talk about showcase, because obviously we create film content for people. So like showcase content is that longer form, you know, content, but then relationship content is your shorter form content. It's true, you don't have as much depth, but there is something interesting about seeing someone every day, even if you just pass by them. It may spark your curiosity to want to talk to them the next time a little bit more in depth. And so it can lead to the longer form, right?
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's the important thing is that you do have the infrastructure and the knowledge and the content so that when you do pique someone's curiosity, you actually have something to show for after once they do come to you.
Yes.
And a lot of the times I think with short form, people don't have that.
Yes.
So I think that's where the difference is. But I love what you mentioned about, you know, the world being polarized. And a lot of the times is because it is so sensationalized, as you mentioned, these short form with no context, because you can't provide context in a 30-second video. And because of that, we find belonging in places of hatred or fear.
Yeah.
And so when you look at the even political, you know, space right now, we just have people that are in these, they subscribe themselves to these very extreme positions, and they think that the other side is just, you know, so different to us because we are like this and they are like that.
Yes.
And I truly believe that it's not because there's something, you know, wrong with them or they're just like so different to us. It's because we all are looking for a place of belonging.
To
and we
belong.
Just like happen to find these places in the easiest way, which is at the moment social media. And then, you know, they show these snippets that really hit our core in terms of what our values are.
And our fears too.
And our fears. Yeah.
It's so funny what you say, because it's true. If you just looked at social media, you would really think, well, we all do it. We look at social media and we take a temperature read on the world and on politics and on a country based on that. But as you say, whether it's a conversation like this or a conversation, in person, oftentimes you'll have conversations with people and they may or may not have the main same opinion as you. But once you get into it, you'll find that, yes, you'll both agree on some points with each other that are of the other side or whatever.
Yeah.
And so the reality in a longer form as it plays out is way less polarized. But unfortunately, none of those conversations, you only know that if you're having them in real life. None of that gets really shown online. So your brain gets tricked into thinking that everyone is only in the extremes when they're not in real life.
Exactly. And it's funny because I read about this the other day and it's called a false polarization bias.
Mm.
So they made a study in the United States and they studied the Democrats and the Republicans. And both of them thought that the other party had way more extreme views than they actually had.
Yeah.
Whereas they had a lot of overlapping beliefs.
Mm.
So it's funny how just a word, in this case, a word, you know, a Democrat or a Republican automatically closes the wall between the two. And I think this is the danger of condensing so much context into one word or into 6-second video, because immediately you just like find your own position and then you kind of like have to defend it, whereas you don't open up the door for actual communication and listening deeply to the other person to understand why is it that they believe X, Y, and Z. And most of the time, the why is probably similar to our own why.
Yeah. I hate to use the example, but it's sometimes... In relationships between men and women, sometimes it's that thing, isn't it, where, you know, they'll say, not to be stereotyped, but let's say that the lady is speaking and the man has to train herself to understand that it's not always about what she's saying, but it's about how she's feeling. And it's so hard for a man's brain to understand that. Like, it's so, so difficult. But actually... like it defies all of your logic. But if you actually can step past it and go, oh, it seems like you're feeling like whatever, then a lot of the charge in that situation is appeased. So it's like hard when we're having these conversations between different sides. It's not always what they're saying. It's the feeling behind it. And if that never gets acknowledged or recognized, then they keep shouting. You know, in politics or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And so my big thing that I'm really going to push this as far as I can, I so believe that brands can be the color into the black and whites.
Nice.
And if the brands can share the same values and then communicate about different things, but in a more nuanced way across the different platforms, not just in 6 seconds, 10 seconds, but allowing the user to, or the customer to, explore the brand and explore themselves as they do that, then we would be able to create spaces for belonging in so many other places rather than just politics or just, you know, the whole black and white stuff. So that's kind of what I believe brands have the power to do. So to tie that to your, you know, the sustainable development goals, I would say
what's your sustainable development goal? Yeah, I always ask,
I would say the well-being one, I think. I mean, we work with so many clients that have other sustainable development goals. So I do like to say that we kind of like, you know, contribute to more than just one. And I'm sure most companies do that.
Yeah.
But for ourselves, because we're so strongly, you know, we have such a strong standpoint on belonging and making people feel like they belong. And because of that, we are sure that it would fix a lot of the, you know, mental health issues that are happening at the moment and the loneliness epidemic. That would probably be ours if we had to choose.
Well-being, yeah. It's interesting. I've been recording a lot of episodes this week, and what's been fascinating about the SDG that each person has chosen, even though they've all been different, They've all made the connection to how that sustainable development goal in one way underpins all the others. So they were talking about, one was saying about, you know, gender equality, how if we don't unlock 50% of the population, then how can we affect the others? Another was talking about energy. If we don't have energy for everybody, you know, how can we unlock these other ones? Yeah. And it's the same for well-being. If we're not well and we're not healthy and coming with our best selves, how can we unlock the others? So it's fascinating, isn't it, how they're all so interconnected?
Yeah. Like everything.
Yeah.
I think if you start thinking about all of these nuances and in any topic, you start seeing that all of the dots connect. And that's why context is so important. Because if we don't give out the context, then we're communicating in silos, and those things are always connected and they do influence one another, which is why also I always say that in terms of marketing and branding, we had three eras that we went through. The first one is very mass branding, you know, think your Coca-Colas and Apple back in the day, and, you know, just amazing campaigns, great stories, you know, a campaign would have some longevity to it, but it was very top down. So people would, you know, the narrative was dictated by the brand and not the person, and the person would just see it. And then we entered the second era, which is very social media, paid advertising and performance and all of these things. And a lot of people made so much money just through pure advertising because they were just brilliant at targeting the right person. And, you know, their products didn't even have to necessarily be very good, but they just hit the right person at the right time. The target audience was immaculate. But these things are so separate. And only now we entered this third era where we need to combine the two. And we have the tools to combine the two. But also on top of that, we have people who are talking back to us, and brands are not just building the narrative by themselves. They're building it with their audience and with their customers. And so all of these dots connect. So sometimes when I see, you know, agencies saying, oh, we only focus on, you know, Facebook ads, or we only focus on this one thing. And I'm like, but these things are connected. I mean, you can't separate these two things from one another.
Yeah.
Because then you don't see the full picture. And I completely agree that, you know, one person can't do it all. But then let's find ways to partner up with the right people.
Yes. Yeah.
And collaborate in a way where we can see the full picture and we can drive meaningful change versus trying to do everything so individualistically and in silos.
Yeah, well, that's a huge point. One of the things I noticed on your LinkedIn earlier was you've written that you like to drive change by creating great things with great people. And it's that same kind of idea, isn't it? Like finding, because even for us, say we do film, like I could think, well, do I want to also do Facebook ads and all these things? And it seems like an awful lot, but by potentially offering a full service, but having other partners within that, it's a much better way to do it, really, because then everyone's an expert rather than just a generalist. And you can offer that sort of more holistic approach for clients. I loved what you said also about brands having the potential to influence positive change, I suppose, in different ways, or almost to try to be an example for that, for what we'd like to see in the world. And I think it's interesting. I would love to hear your thoughts. I think it's possible as a smaller brand or even as a medium kind of boutique type brand. I think when brands get really big, they almost become like, they just become very risk averse because they, you know, like you've seen Pepsi, for example, try to do that campaign. I think it was to do with Black Lives Matter or something. And it just really backfired because, well, maybe for a bunch of reasons, you know. So it's almost like, when you're almost like a founder-led smaller team, it's kind of like the brand is a reflection of you and what you believe and stuff, but it becomes something different and bigger when it becomes really big. Do you think that there's room for huge brands to also do this, or is it more the domain of the smaller brands potentially?
I think there's room, but it can't be forced. And sometimes big brands, when they do these good cause things, there's something that you feel skeptical about because you're just like, are they doing it for the right reasons?
Yeah.
Or are they not? And I think now people are so good at sniffing that out.
Yeah.
So starting with grassroots campaigns, instead of just talking about it, go do it first.
Yeah.
And if you manage to build a community around that, and for example, if locally they're able to gather people, you know, Pepsi lovers who maybe it's an event or something where people can
or
come
a live
and
podcast
talk to one
or
another.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Just like involving people from the very beginning and then actually doing something to make the change versus just, you know, slapping a huge campaign out saying, hey, this is what we believe.
Yeah.
Like if that's not something that you have been consistently doing from the beginning, it's a little bit,
it doesn't land.
It sounds a little off. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like someone behind doors has said, oh, this is topical right now. Let's do a big grand statement and benefit from all of the kind of sentiment around this right now in one grand swoop.
Yeah.
Rather than actually, exactly. It's a bit like, even though it was probably a very expensive big ad, it's a little bit like, you know, popping out the short form content rather than sitting down and writing the 20-hour research Substack, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think it was just the wrong reasons. And I mean, I'm the first to say that sometimes customers do the right thing for the wrong reasons, but I don't think brands have the, like, I don't think brands can do that, especially big brands.
Yeah. So have you any examples of campaigns that you've loved? And let's maybe talk about them and why you think they've worked so well, or equally juicy and interesting is ones that maybe didn't work so well.
That didn't work. I mean, I think the one that is the most talked about these days is the one from American Eagle. I don't know if you've heard of
that
one.
Tell us a bit about it. So
there's a campaign with Sydney Sweeney, who's herself a very popular person right now. She's an actress in Euphoria and then also White Lotus. So, two very popular shows at the moment. So she's kind of like the it girl at the moment.
Yeah.
And so American Eagle... is it American Eagle? Yeah, I think it's American Eagle. I don't want to...
Yeah,
do a quick Google. Let me just check. Yeah, exactly. Just in case.
But we loved watching White Lotus. We watched all three seasons. It's really good, yeah.
Yeah. It's American Eagle. I wasn't lying.
Yeah.
So there's this campaign, and it's called Sydney Sweeney Has Great Jeans.
Oh.
This is jeans in terms of... the jeans, the actual jeans,
wearing
because American
jeans.
Eagle sells jeans. But then it's also, you know, kind of like a play on a word, I guess. But someone just created a TikTok video about it, and they were like, oh, this is a very kind of racist and
kind of almost like a eugenics
campaign.
Type thing, like, you know, that certain jeans are better than others kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. And also because Sydney Sweeney is obviously, you know,
white
Caucasian, and she's white and blonde hair, and she's beautiful, has basically like all of these features that... that are, you know, beautiful in terms of like what society thinks as of now. And so there was this huge backlash, which was, oh my gosh, like this is definitely eugenics. And so many people started creating content of it. And this just shows you how there's no longer just one narrative going down.
Oh my God.
One person can make a TikTok video and it'll just take off and everybody else will jump on that train and start creating more content.
Yeah.
And so... I was very curious to see how American Eagle was going to react to that, because a lot of the times the brands would be, you know, turn on their PR emergency.
And
oh my gosh, we have to go.
And yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And what I appreciated about American Eagle is that they said, hey, we like that's not at all what we meant. And we stand by what we do. And if you look at all of the past things that we've done, it's very much diverse.
Yes.
And I think they just like took a stand of like, well, you know what? That's just not true.
I love that. I love that because there's so much fear around getting canceled and not saying the right thing that people are scared to actually say what they think anymore. And so then is it better that we're all kind of just faking it to each other and then that's a better world? Surely it has to be a better world where we can disagree and we can talk and we can try and understand and we can, you know, it's sort of, I guess it's, perhaps it's a way of thinking like, do we presume that people want to do their best or want to be good? Or do we presume the worst of people? And I guess it's almost like a worldview. Like it might be messy in the beginning and it might, we might have a few upsetting conversations perhaps, but we're kind of like, it feels like we're living in the real world rather than we're sort of creating, I don't know, it's almost, there's something very uncomfortable about a world where people are not really saying what they think.
Yes, I agree with that 100%. And and I think that's why in the future now, American Eagle would have more like whatever they say has more gravity now, because it's like, oh, they're real, you know, they will say what actually is, versus a lot of brands that would just come out and be like, oh, we're so sorry, this, you know, we didn't think about this. And it just like brings your credibility down, I feel, when you come out and do that. Of course, if you did something terrible, then
maybe there is a time and a place.
yeah, exactly. But in those cases, I totally feel like brands should just go back to the core of what their brand and what their values are. And if this was not something that people are saying it is, then it's okay to come out and be like, nope, that's just not true. And, you know, we have consistently done other things before and we've always stayed true to our brand and to our values.
Yes.
And if you don't believe that for this time, you're just going to have to deal with that.
Yeah. And to be fair, the funny thing about the other people that start creating the content, it becomes like a bit of a wildfire. It's out of control. Mm. Like a lot of times, like I've seen it. I don't know if you've been following the it ends with us and the Justin Baldoni and Blake Lively thing.
Oh, yes.
So the internet has caught on to that and they're creating content all the time. And it's got to a point now where in the beginning there was new information coming out and it was genuinely interesting. But now those creators who are creating content, they've become dependent on that content to make money. So actually a lot of what they're talking about is not even... there's nothing new in it. It's like it's a catchy headline or whatever. You think, oh, that's interesting. And there's nothing there. So a lot of times when something is a fire is burning like that on the internet, the people who jump on it, it's not even that they even believe it or agree with it. They're just realizing there's some attention here and I'm going to cash in on it. You know what I mean? So it's,
it would be metrics.
They're chasing metrics. You would think easily if you were on the end of it, like, oh, they all like, what would you call it? The ethics, they're against us and everything else. Some of them will really believe it, but half of them won't even really care what it is. They're just jumping on it.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny because I think it was in a Scott Galloway book, but they also did a study around like how people talk about their husbands on Instagram and Facebook, for example, versus what they Google. And Googling is very anonymous versus, you know, Instagram is very public and you're just kind of, you know, showing the best version of yourself. So I don't remember the exact metrics now, but it was definitely above 60%, where it was always very positive on Instagram, where it was, you know, I have the best husband in the world, or, you know, we're just like having this beautiful life together. And then on Google, you have like, is my husband gay?
Yeah.
And then all of the negative stuff was predominantly on the anonymized platform. So I just found it so interesting to see how actually whatever it is that you see on Instagram and on all of those very public non-anonymous platforms is most of the time just not real.
Not real. And, you know, I've always found this amusing, obviously not in every case, but sometimes if you, for whatever reason, know the behind the scenes with a couple, sometimes a lot of those big showy type things have been posted in the midst of them actually really struggling in real life.
Yes.
Because it's kind of like a balancing thing. It's almost like they're trying to convince themselves that everything's great, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. I'm so mindful about that when I do publish on LinkedIn, for example. Mm. And it's funny because sometimes when you do want to say the truth, you also feel like, oh my God, maybe people think that I just want attention and I just want people to be like, oh my gosh, this girl thinks that she's having such a terrible life, which, you know.
With her double latte. Like
either, exactly. Traveling around the world, seeing whales.
It's hard.
It's such a difficult thing on socials. And again, I think it's just like lack of context.
I think it's one of those things too, isn't it? Where I've been thinking about it a lot and people, you know, they'll criticize you no matter what you do. Some people. Mm-hmm. So I guess the only true thing you can do is try and just tune into whether it's for the right reasons and it's genuine and authentic to yourself. And God forbid, you know, you do something stupid and whatever else, then, you know, it's not the end of the world either, you know, especially if you're doing it sincerely. Maybe you'll learn something. Maybe you'll realize that that wasn't a good idea, whatever. But I kind of feel like it's almost better, I don't know who quote, but it's a famous quote, isn't there, that it's the person on the battlefield or in the arena that gets criticized, yet being in the arena is the only place where, you know, in a way life's almost really happening, or at least the opportunity to grow and learn is greater there. So kind of like just get in the arena, get dirty, get busy, and just try and be aware and conscious and learning all the time.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. I think social media, for all of its like bad things, is also such an opportunity maker. I mean, we met on social media.
Yeah, exactly,
so that's
yeah.
Awesome. So yeah. So it does allow us to truly connect with the other person, but we just have to be mindful about it. So I always say that in terms of the posts and the and just like the 10-second very sensational things, that's okay. We do need to somehow play into the algorithm just because otherwise
no one sees us. Yeah.
No one sees us. But then let's also have a space where then you can see through the people that are relevant to you and then be able to communicate to them without the stress of algorithm. Mm-hmm. So that is in its easiest form, something like a Substack or a just an email list, because an email list, I always say, is the most important asset you can have in terms of audience, because it's the only audience that you own.
It's off the platforms, isn't it? Yeah.
It's off the platform. You're not reliant on any algorithms, right? So sometimes, for example, on LinkedIn, you never know. Maybe you can be shadow banned in 2 days and never reach your audience anymore.
Yeah.
Or the platform can just, I don't know, block your account. And there's just so many different things that can happen. Whereas if you have an email and you don't like one email provider, you can take your audience and go to a different email provider, right?
Yeah.
So you actually own the list. And then you're able to talk to them in a chronological order. If you send out an email, you know that it will reach the person at the time. And so because of that, also be extra mindful about what you put in that email, because they have given you permission to be as close to you as you possibly can digitally. So don't take that lightly.
That's a really good
point. Make sure that you are really providing them with value, because if you lose that trust, they will unsubscribe. They will. To me, that's like the biggest honor for a potential customer, to really be like, hey, you know what? I really like your content. Feel free to pop into my inbox every day or every few days. So I don't take that lightly. And when I do write emails, I overthink them a lot. Maybe you shouldn't do that to my extent, but don't take that lightly for sure.
Yeah, that's such a nice point, because I have tried in the past, I wonder if listeners have tried as well, you know, to, especially if you're a smaller business or a smaller organization, and you're, perhaps you are the one writing the emails and trying to schedule the emails and doing the posts, and, you know, you're doing a lot of different things. And so you don't have a dedicated person, or you know, you're stretching your time. So you look at tools and things that are marketed at you to make it easier and to auto do them and to do little sequences and whatever. And whilst for sure there's utility there, I think that is also where that human touch, or that, like you say, that honoring that personal touch can get lost, you know, in trying to automate and stuff, you know. It's hard balance, isn't it? Because to sit down and write a fully from the heart kind of personal email each time takes up a lot of time.
It takes a lot of time. And it's so funny that you mentioned this, because I've noticed that whenever on LinkedIn, I'm sure you have this as well, there are so many people trying to sell you some random stuff on LinkedIn, and they're so persistent in messaging you that I don't even open up their messages anymore.
Yeah.
But I always open up messages when I see that someone sent me a voice note, because I'm like, oh, okay, there's a person behind this that took their time to send me a voice note.
Yeah.
And so I always ended up replying to those voice notes, either with a voice note or just a simple reply, just because I appreciate them taking that 15 seconds to, you know, drop me a voice note. And it's so interesting, because yesterday I got a voice note for the first time that was clearly AI. And the voice note, I know, oh, I was in shock. It just, you know, it was like, hi, Ala. I was like, oh, interesting. Like, they clearly know who they're talking to. And then at some point I was like, oh my gosh, this is AI. Like, they're reading in such a monotone way. And I was so shocked. And I was just like, they have just ruined this one thing that was so personal.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
So yeah, definitely, you know, automating everything and doing everything in just like masses, that has, you know, that's definitely something that people are going to start just discarding.
especially with AI, like you say, because funnily enough, I love voice notes. So I send them to a lot of people. But I'm always conscious, since I've heard a few people tell me that they absolutely hate voice notes. So I've always been a bit, sometimes I say, I hope you don't mind voice notes. I think it's because some people see them, and if they can't listen to them then because they're in work or whatever, they then forget or they leave it till later or whatever. So, but any case,
fair enough.
I had a similar thing recently. I had a lady who I connected with on LinkedIn send me a message, and again, seemed really personal. But there's a few giveaway signs. Obviously, the one is the long dash, which, yeah, ChatGPT. Yeah, is that what it is?
Yeah.
M dash. And like, if people haven't figured out yet that if you're leaving that in, anyone who's kind of noticed the pattern will know immediately it's from ChatGPT. So it's like that long dash between words. So that was there. But even before that, I realized, because it said, oh, I really enjoyed listening to your TEDx talk. And I'm thinking, I haven't done a TEDx talk, but we work an awful lot with TEDx. So like, we've been partnering with TEDx London, filming right. all their stuff for like over 10 years. So they've obviously just picked random things and turned it into this whole narrative. And I was thinking, like, it's pretty impressive. Like, the whole thing was, well, like, you know, and very flattering and all of that, but just not true.
Yeah.
And I thought true. Immediately, like, it's just... But again, like, someone's been sold the idea of that. And it's a great, it sounds irresistible, right? Oh, it will find all the perfect details of your people. You can reach out to 5,000 people at the same time. You're like, wow, you signed me up. But in reality, on the other end of it, that's what is coming through, you know? And so, yeah.
I think it's so funny how people, because as you mentioned, it sounds so irresistible, but on the other hand, we always need to, just from a marketing standpoint, think about how would we react to those messages coming through to us. And so thinking about the end person that is going to be receiving this piece of information, not just from, you know, that it's AI and clearly does not work, but even from a messaging standpoint, sometimes that's the easiest way to know what we need to write. It's like, what would be really helpful and valuable to this end person?
Yeah.
And I know that you work a lot with nonprofits, all the NGOs and things like that. And I think there's so much opportunity left on the table, because most of the time people, you know, humanitarians, they're huge heart and they're just wanting to do the best. But they forget that the mass audience doesn't necessarily care about what they care about.
No.
So a lot of the times they communicate these very complex ideas around the things that they have been sitting in for such a long time, thinking that, of course, people are going to care about this, but they don't.
No.
And so that is where I feel a regular marketer, or just somebody that works in business, when they go into working with NGOs, the first thing that they see is, this is not going to work in the market just because people don't, that's not what they care about. Just as an example, I'm part of the European Citizens Initiative at the moment, and we're working on a project called Good Food for All. So we're trying to get 1 million signatures, and once that's ready, we're going to start January 7th, actually. So
nice.
I'll be posting about that.
Yeah.
But we're trying to weave, you know, the right to adequate food across Europe into the European law. And when we worked on this, it was, you know, I was pretty much the only person that came from a business background, and everybody else was humanitarians.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting, because lovely, lovely people.
Yeah.
But all of the messages that they came up with were that we need to help these farmers and the supply chain is flawed. And I'm just like, this is too complex for a regular person to care about.
To connect with why they would care about it, or how it affects them personally, you know? Yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, if you tell them, hey, we believe that in all of the supermarkets in Europe, you should have adequate food for an affordable price, and you don't have to always check the label to see if there's something carcinogenous and X, Y, and Z, but it will help you and your family and your children be healthier. That is so much more powerful than talking about the problems in the, you know, food supply chain.
Because all of that stuff is, it's almost like, if that's your promise to me, then I'm in. How you do it, that's your problem.
Yeah.
know what I mean? How you do it with, you know, whether it's farmers or this or that, like you work that out.
Yeah.
What I'm interested in is that I get the bit at my end. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're interested in it further and you already give them the, again, the permission to enter your inbox, that's when you can maybe give a bit more context.
Yes.
Maybe they are interested in reading more about it. But to start from the get-go with that message, it just simply doesn't work. And I think maybe there is a parallel to that on social media as well, where like the hook might be something more, appealing to the general audience, but then you give a bit more context and more depth through other communication.
Yeah. And what's actually interesting on that is you're starting to see hooks, which are the opposite of what you're trying to say. So because it hooks people in. So for example, it'll say like why you should never buy one of these vacuum cleaners, for example. and then it goes into it and it's like, because they're so good at doing this and they're so good at doing that. And halfway in, you realize this is an ad for the vacuum cleaner.
You're like, damn, I fell for this.
Yeah, but it's because we think, oh yeah, let me check this out as to why I should save myself from buying this vacuum cleaner. And then you realize, oh, actually, it sounds brilliant. Or whatever, you know, whatever it is. It just shows how our brain is hooked in different ways. Initially.
Yes, exactly. And then really understanding what the recipient of the message, who that person is, and then what is it that they find valuable, at least for the time being, and then we can weave in some other information and educational components that we want them to know about.
Yeah, that's a really good example. That I'll be watching out for that. That sounds exciting. It's interesting too, over the years, we've done a lot of work with academics as well. They're another group, or even scientists, that are having credible information to share, but are not very good at all at how to share it.
This is such a big topic for, I think, any brilliant person in their own domain. So, for example, tech startups, most of the time, brilliant people, they have built the most amazing product, but the way that they're communicating it is
because they're bogged down in the details, right? There's actually a concept in academia, I think it's called knowledge transfer, where the rating of the university in terms of the quality of its research is measured partly by how successful they've been at transferring that knowledge out into the real world and getting it used in real context rather than just in the research lab.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Switzerland, we have certain universities that they're called more like practical universities, and I teach in one of those. And so the university gets money when the student leaves university and gets a job because they become an economically viable person.
Wow.
Basically. So it's a nice way, I feel, to incentivize universities to be a little bit more practical and then share the knowledge that is more, you know, real life, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Have you any other examples you wanted to share before we sort of start to wrap up? I know you've probably come across many. The American Eagle one was brilliant. Anything else that comes to mind that sort of showcases either a really good way that a brand has done storytelling or maybe not so good?
Yeah, I would say one of my favorite campaigns or activations was by KitKat in Japan, I believe that was. I don't know if you've heard of this. This was quite a while back, but I just thought that it was so interesting. So KitKat, you know, everybody knows KitKat.
Yeah.
It's definitely a mass product, general population. So what kind of story can they actually tell other than, you know, take a break?
Take a Kit Kat.
Yeah, exactly. The typical story. But in Japan, they noticed in their sales that every single time before the exam period, the sales of Kit Kat were a little bit higher. So, you know, the very smart people at Kit Kat were like, okay, why is this happening? What is it that every single time there is exam period, Kit Kats, you know, sales are just skyrocketing. And then they found out that I don't remember the exact reasons now, but I think either the name Kit Kat or something with the shape of it means luck. So what would happen is that students before their exams, they would buy each other Kit Kats
for good luck.
To, you know, wish each other good luck basically. So it's such a beautiful story that KitKat themselves wouldn't be able to come up with. But it was just this meaning that was given by, yeah, the consumer, basically. And they kind of took that opportunity and made campaigns around that. And so now you will see, for example, KitKat with matcha flavor and things like that, which are more catered towards the culture. I think things like that, just like really listening deeply to the consumer because they are telling you something. And then how can you take that and then say that, hey, you are heard and we want to continue this conversation with you?
Yeah, I think it's where you move beyond marketing, isn't it? To, I think the holy grail, I suppose, is to try to create a sense of belonging, a sense of community, a sense of connection and meaning between the brand and its users. I guess that's where exactly. You really, it becomes more than just a product, right?
Exactly. The meaning is just such a big part of it. Because then if sneakers were to do that, it's like it does not have the same meaning anymore.
Yes.
And so that's when you have this loyalty towards this brand, because there's something very concrete and nostalgic and just like this meaningful part about it that you can't let go of and becomes part of your identity. So the same thing as if you compare a house to a home has meaning, right? It's difficult to leave a home that you've lived in for 20 years versus an Airbnb.
Yeah.
In theory, functionally, they're the same. They have a bedroom, they have a kitchen.
Yeah.
They're safe, they, you know, roof over your head. But one has deep meaning and the other doesn't. And that is the same for brands and products.
And what in your, if you were to just give us some parting nuggets, like in all the work that you do, are there any sort of principles or sort of things you can share with us that would help? Obviously, we're talking particularly about brands or organizations that are trying to do good, but I'm sure they're kind of universal in many ways that can help them to create some of that stickiness or belonging with their audience?
The first thing would be, instead of thinking of your brand as an identity, think of it as a place, because it's just easier to draw people into a place, because then you know who you should invite. What do you want to happen in this place? How do you want these people to interact with one another? You know, what do you want to prepare? What is the experience that you want to do? I think brands are identities, but for a business, it's just so difficult to understand, what does that even mean? Like, how do I practically...
Or make it tangible, kind of, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so if you think of it as any touch point with us is a space or a place where people can come and talk to us and talk to one another, that to me is already a big win for a brand. Because I'm just going to give you a quick example here, but
yeah.
I had a demo call with a company called Roam, which is a digital office sort of platform. And it was so interesting because we went into this platform and it was a demo with two other people. I expected it to just be me, but it was two more people. And the salesperson was asking us questions and then we were kind of talking to one another. And by the end of the demo, we were like, well, we can't just say bye now. Like, we kind of know each other, you know? So like, we should just exchange contact. And so I think creating those spaces for people to come and meet one another, because clearly if they have come to your place, they probably share similar values or do similar things. And so allowing them to communicate with one another and build those communities using your own platform is one big thing.
Yeah.
And the second thing is think about the social identity of the person that uses your brand. What I mean by this is a brand is nothing more than me wanting to almost showcase who I am. So yes. If I am wearing a certain brand, I want people to have a certain perception of me.
Yes.
So what is that perception? What do we want people to think and feel when another person looks at them, right? So what does it mean that I'm using or wearing your brand? And it's a difficult question to answer, but it's also not too difficult. I think it's just like being aware of that and sitting down and really writing that out. What does it mean about our customer that they're using our brand or that they're wearing yes. our products? So those, I would say, are the two big nuggets that I always think about.
And there's a lot in there, isn't there, to unpack? Like that, there's obviously two main points, but if anyone wants to sit down, you could do a whole day with your team, like thinking that through, isn't it? And speaking to, what's coming to my mind is speaking to like a range of your existing or past customers to like ask them to get some insights on that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then you might get information and answers that you don't even expect. So,
which is probably just even like better, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm just going to read out a few cool things that I saw here on your LinkedIn, and then you can comment, and then we'll wrap up. So you've put here, I believe, and there's 10 points, creation is one of the most human acts. We create to grow, connect, and belong. Purpose is an attitude. That's why I sweat the details. Everything is nuanced, and the world is not black and white. True belonging comes from love and understanding, not fear and anger. Design does not decorate the world, it builds it. Obsession is what will set us apart from AI. All dots connect, even the seemingly unrelated ones. Business acumen without creativity is not business acumen. Love that one. Brands can be an answer to fostering true meaning. So what's fascinating about that is that those are 10 points on your LinkedIn. I love it. Is that just reading through them, we pretty much covered all of those points.
Yeah, we did. I was just going to say, I was like, wow, we touched on all of them.
Yeah, and I didn't like reference them at all until the end. So that's nice. That was good.
It's lovely.
Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. Where can we get in touch with you if people want to connect?
LinkedIn is where I'm the most active at the moment. So please do reach out on LinkedIn and feel free to send me a DM as well. I do reply to
those
unless they're written. A voice note, yes, but not AI, please. I do want to hear your real voice.
Yeah.
So just Alaho, A-L-A space H-O. And hopefully there's going to be more content coming soon. I do have all of that, up my sleeve. I just need to finally sit down and do it.
Yeah, me
but
too.
But it's coming. It's coming.
Lots of ideas. So, I'll put all the notes in the show notes, including your agency website and everything as well.
Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, see you soon.
Thanks so much for listening to the end. Really appreciate it. I hope there was lots for you to take away there. As usual, all the links will be in the show notes for you to follow up and dive deeper. I know we talked a lot about being able to dive into that deeper, long-form, nuanced content. So please do that. Leave us a review. Let us know. Give us some feedback. Send us a message as to what you're enjoying. It's hard to describe how important it is, or not that important it is. You don't owe it to us as such, but how meaningful it is when we receive it. So, do reach out if you can, and look forward to seeing you on the next one, which will be in a month. And with this one, because it was a bit longer, we did a bit of recording after the sort of official podcast stopped. You might see a bonus episode with some of our further chat. So watch out for that. It may come in between the one next month. But if in any case, in the meantime, whenever the next one is, have a great month, have a great week and great days. And you're gonna have some bad days in there. I heard a great quote recently, which is, did you have a bad year, or did you just have a few bad days that really lasted for a long time? So yeah, don't let the difficult moments or days color any more than they need to. But look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Take care.